going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Dolphins in Depth podcast. I'm Daniel Yafusi. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't call it a comeback just yet, but the Dolphins are on a little bit of a winning streak. The Dolphins have won their last two games, the most recent coming over the Baltimore Ravens last Thursday night, 22-10 in front of the entire country watching. The Dolphins got a couple days to rest, savor the win, but they're back at it this week preparing for a divisional road game against the New York Jets on Sunday, and we're going to get into a lot of that, as well as preview this Sunday's game. But I first want to introduce this week's guest. We have DJ BNMA from the New York Daily News. He covers the Jets. DJ, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. You know, I'm just getting ready for possibly the worst week of my life covering football live.
And for the people that don't know why this might be a rough week for you, explain.
I am a tortured Dolphins fan also that covered the Jets. So, you know, that conflict of interest is going to be apparent throughout the entire afternoon on Sunday. So
yeah. I know a lot of Jets fans have been giving you a lot of, at least early on, they were giving you a lot of heat for being a Dolphins fan, but I think you've been doing a great job. You know, we all might have different, you know, opinions and whatnot, but I feel like you've been doing a good job not letting the, you know, potential or perceived bias affect your reporting. I think you've been very fair kind of on both aspects of it. And I think it's kind of cool too that, you know, kind of for me last week, for somebody that covered the Ravens for two seasons, I was able to bring that insight into my reporting. And I feel like, same with you, you're going to be able to bring a lot of insight into the Dolphins just from like watching the team your entire life and, you know, seeing them up close. So definitely going to be an interesting week. You know, these are two teams that are in the bottom of the AFC East standings. But again, there's another opportunity for, you know, one team to kind of, you know, get ahead of the other and kind of separate themselves in that aspect. But I want to start with just one aspect of the Ravens game last week. I know it was a couple of days ago, but just something that I'm still just kind of confused about, and I want to bring you in to discuss this, was Brian Flores' handling of the quarterback situation last week. You know, obviously Tua didn't start the Texans game because of the fractured finger on his left throwing hand. And then they're on a short week, you know, not as much time to rest that finger. He doesn't have first team reps, so he's the backup. He's active, but he's the backup behind Jacoby Brissett. And then Jacoby Brissett on the first drive of the third quarter, he goes down with a knee injury. So Tua gets thrown in there, and it looks like Jacoby's able to play. And, you know, Flores said that after the game, but he rolls the dice with Tua. Tua obviously orchestrates that that fourth quarter drive late in the game to kind of ice the game, separate the team from the Ravens, and then go on to, you know, pull off one of the biggest upsets of the season. But I just feel like this was just another layer of like Flores' handling of the whole Tua situation. And it's like, I mean, Tua, he wasn't great, but I thought he was fine. He got the job done. And I'm wondering, like, if Tua was, you know, first off, if he wasn't able to start, why was he active? But now that he is active and he was able to go out there and get the job done, throw the ball downfield when Flores said he wasn't able to, I'm thinking, like, what is going on? Like, what is Flores doing? I mean, what were your thoughts on Thursday night and how that went down and overall how the Dolphins and Flores kind of handled Tua?
Bro, it's been Tua stuff, bro. Like, it's been since he started last year, you know, benching him against the Broncos, benching him against the Raiders, and then, you know, going into this year with the Deshaun Watson stuff, and then obviously as this year has gone on, you know what I'm saying, like, with the finger thing where it's like, oh, we don't know if he made throws down the field. He literally gets out there and he makes a 35-yard throw down the field to Jalen Waddle. Like,
exactly.
It's been jarring, you know? Like, I could understand if, like, Jacoby Brissett was, like, a capable backup, but, like, what are we doing here? You know, like, watching that game with Jacoby Brissett, like, Tua would have broken neck would have been Jacoby Brissett. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just didn't understand how you say, hey, you know, we don't know if he can make those on the field with the finger, and then he goes out there and he's able to make those. And it kind of understand if, like, Jacoby Brissett was also making throws down the field, but he made one throw down the field. Like, he wasn't throwing
to open receiver. Either. Yeah.
Yeah, like it wasn't like he was doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, like, I obviously, you know, you and I, we talked on the Twitter spaces, and you've mentioned that, like, you know, I had my question about Tua's ability to throw the ball down the field, but you always said, like, it's the offensive, it comes down to the offensive line, they're not providing the time, which is a fair point. So, like, for you to be like, oh, well, we don't know if Tua can make those down the field, well, your offensive line not going to be able to give anybody the afford the time to do that for the majority of the snaps. So, it's just been weird from, like, I won't say from day one, but it's been weird since he's been the starter, just the handling of Tua. You know, I don't think, like, that's a conducive way to groom or develop a young quarterback.
Yeah, and I mean, something that I guess stuck out to me was Flores, like, on multiple occasions, he's like, we want to save Tua from himself. Like, he, when Tua first fractured his ribs, it was, we want to save him from himself. He's fighting to be out there, da-da-da.
Right.
And then weeks later, you know, he kind of said the same thing. Hey, like, he wants to go out there and play. We want to save him from himself. And it's like, I almost feel like it's kind of like Flores kind of emulating kind of like that Belichick way of treating every position the same, no matter
right.
what position it is and no matter what the status of the player is. And it's like, yeah, I understand that, but I feel like you also have to have some sensitivity to the quarterback position. And we still, like, haven't even gotten, like, 16 full games of Tua, you know? But again, it's like, I just didn't really understand the decision to, like, make him active and not start. But then he went out there, and then he was completely – I mean, he threw the ball more downfield than we've seen him, like, throw when he was healthy. So that was just kind of weird. Like, Flores said, oh, we tried to change it up and make some shorter throws for Tua. It's like, nah, Tua was throwing the ball downfield, man. And now it's like when Flores came on Monday and said, yeah, Tua's going to be the starter on Sunday. I'm like, what changed over the past 4 days? Did Tua's finger just magically heal in 4 days where you're just completely ready to name the starter? Or was it like, oh, I've seen enough of Jacoby. We're just going to throw Tua out there. So that's just it's just really weird to me. I guess it doesn't matter now since Tua's starting. But again, I just thought the whole handling of the situation was kind of weird.
It's been weird. It's been weird since he's been the starter. I feel that a lot of the questions regarding Tua from a national perspective are because of Brian Flores. Like, I remember I was talking to one reporter, and he remembers saying he had a conversation with Brian Flores, and Brian Flores was kind of confused why, like, the national waves were making it seem like the Dolphins didn't believe in Tua. Dude, you benched him twice. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And this year, you're giving us all these reasons why you don't believe in Tua, but then you go out and you say you believe in Tua. My issue with Brian Flores is like he'll spit on our face and tell us it's raining. Like, nah, bro, like, you're out here lying to us. You feel me? Like, when you say, like, oh, Tua's our quarterback, but you're actively trying to go get Deshaun Watson. You know what I'm saying?
And Greer, like, and Chris Greer pretty much, like, without saying Deshaun Watson's name, just said, yeah, we looked into trading for Deshaun Watson. It's like, I don't know whether that was – I mean, I'm glad he talked to us, but I'm like, I mean, I don't know how much better he came out of that, literally saying, hey, we looked into trading for Deshaun Watson and tried to play it off as, oh, yeah, it was like our due diligence for any player that's available. Like, no, it wasn't. That's different. You know, you got to treat the QB position a little differently with a little more sensitivity. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I completely agree there. You didn't see the Bengals or the Chargers doing, granted, their quarterbacks are a lot further along in terms of their development, and, like, they're a lot more proven, but you didn't see them, like, oh, you know, should we look into Deshaun Watson? You didn't see the Cleveland Browns looking into, oh, should we look into Deshaun Watson? Like, nah, like, granted, like, I understand, like, the Carolina Panthers looking in, I understand the Eagles looking in, things of that nature, and I understand from a business perspective why the Dolphins were looking into it, but again, like, there's so much baggage outside of that. And you have all the leverage. Deshaun Watson wants to go to Miami.
Yeah.
Like, he's only waived his no trade clause to y'all. Like, you guys could easily just wait this out until next season. You know what I'm saying?
You got a little more clarity and everything. Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's going to, one, players aren't stupid. Like, they're not dinosaurs. They're not cavemen. Like, they're going to check their phones. They're going to see the rumors with social media. So, like, that's only going to help divide somewhat of the locker room, where it's like, is this really our quarterback? Even though he says it's our quarterback, we could get Deshaun Watson because he is an elite quarterback. But then you also got the legal out, you know, the legal stuff that has to take care of. Like, there's so much where you could just waited. Because, you could have just waited until the off season. I do believe that a lot of the smoke was coming from Deshaun Watson's camp.
Because, I believe that as well, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're trying to force something. So, of course, like, a lot of it's probably coming from his camp. But, like, it's not like the Dolphins weren't also engaged in those conversations. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they, like I said, Greer tried to make it seem as, hey, like, we were just kind of doing our due diligence as if we do any other random third string defensive tackle that just got let it go. Like, no, it was a lot different. And again, it was something that they could have, if they were, I mean, obviously they do have to do their due diligence and look into it, but it was something where, I mean, they really could have waited it out till the offseason and not really forced their hand, especially with the uncertainty of the legal situation. But all that aside, you know, we put that kind of to bed once the trade deadline passed. And I want to go back to Tua specifically. As someone who, I will say, has not been the biggest Tua supporter over the past two seasons. And, I mean, we've gotten, you know, a couple of games. I don't even know how many games we've gotten because he's missed three games or he's missed four games and then came in the middle of another game. But and got knocked out of another game. But regardless, I mean, from what you've seen in spurts this year of Tua, have you – maybe been encouraged? Do you still have reservations? What are your thoughts?
I mean, make sure I'm careful with my words. So last year I was all in on Tua. Like I wanted the Dolphins to draft Tua. I was all in on it. I was encouraged by some of the stuff I saw last year. This year, the injury stuff has really concerned me because again, like that's one position where you need your guy to be out there. I mean, and granted, it's not his fault. He can't control, you know, a defensive end breaking his ribs when you have Jesse Davis whiffing. A lot of that was also, like, the poor management of the offensive line.
Real quick, I must point out that the Dolphins, both of the Dolphins offensive tackles have gotten the quarterbacks hurt now. Jesse Davis, his missed block got Tua put on IR with fractured ribs. And Liam Eichenberg's missed block on Justin Houston, I believe, got Jacoby with a little knee. And it looks like Jacoby's going to be fine. But I feel like that is like the biggest indictment of this offensive line, that both of their tackles have gotten both quarterbacks hurt this season. But I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of – my homeboy, he was at the game. And it was kind of crazy that once Jacoby got hurt, like the crowd went crazy. Like that.
That crowd from like drive two was like ready for Tua to go in. Like they were, they were like, we want Tua. Like they were ready for Tua. They did not come to that game and see Jacoby Brissett.
Bro, my homeboy called me. He was like, he was just like, yeah, once Jacoby got hurt, the crowd was like, whoa, Tua!
Oh man! I'm glad Jacoby's feeling good, but I'm glad it wasn't a serious injury. But yeah, like they were. There was a little bit of like, hey, like we hope Jacoby's okay. But as soon as like Tua put his helmet on and they showed Tua on his screen, it was like, all right, let's go. So they were definitely ready for Tua to go in that game.
So my only I believe that Tua does a lot of the quarterback stuff, right? I feel like he has good footwork. You know, obviously he's still learning how to read defenses. He's getting better at that. I think he has good accuracy. I would like for him to be better when it comes to throwing against pressure. Because, I mean, this is the NFL. You got to be able to deal with it. But my biggest concern is how long do we have to wait before it all comes together for Tua? Because, like, he doesn't have the arm strength to be able to overcome, you know, and below-average offensive line. Doesn't have the arm. Like, doesn't have the overall talent to be able to escape and make plays when things aren't perfect for him. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, like if you watched him at Bama and you watch him now, he lost some arm strength. I don't know how that's even, like, debatable. Like, there's certain throws that he was making at Bama that he's just not making again.
I've heard that, too.
Like the throw against the throw that put him on the scene against Georgia, that covered two hole shot. Like, I haven't seen a throw like that since, like, like in terms of like the velocity that came on that throw, like I think he can still get it out there, but in terms of like being able to like fire it in a hole with the distance and the velocity, because it ain't always about okay, hey, how far can you throw it? Because if you put it all, if you put all your might into it, you can get it down the field 50, maybe 55 yards. But it's more, can you fit it into tight windows?
And then that's anticipation as well, you know, the timing.
Another thing, you know what I'm saying, like. He can't be late with anticipation. So my issue is more like Would he like? Will he be able to overcome those things? And you know, can the Dolphins be able to put an offensive line around him that can, you know, lessen some of the pressure that will get put on? Because I mean, like as you've made a great point. You can't play behind that offensive line. Most quarterbacks will struggle behind that offensive line. Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But again, like Tua hasn't been good under pressure. Like according to Next Gen Stats, he has a passer rate of 35 when he's under pressure. You know what I'm saying?
Under pressure a lot, man.
yeah, he is. But here's the thing, though. When he's not under pressure, he has a passer rate of 102 according to Next Gen Stats. You know what I'm saying? Like 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You know what I'm saying? Completion percentage of 70. But under pressure, you know, it's 47% and it's 35 passer rating. And granted, most quarterbacks do dissipate once they're under pressure. But, like, I'm trying to figure out how much if it's, like, there's all pressure ain't, you know, all pressure ain't equal, right? Like, pressure, like, some pressure around your feet, you know what I'm saying? Like, you might be under a little bit of pressure, but that's not, like, a guy completely missing a block. And now you have a 6'5", 280 defensive pound lineman coming at your neck. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are not equatable. So I do think that Thursday was encouraging. It was encouraging. I do feel like Tua can be a good quarterback. I have no question about that. But can he be great? I don't know if he can be great with that arm. That's my only preservation because it's let's be honest, it's a below average NFL arm.
I guess you know, and I've spoken about this a lot over the past couple. And I've been here for couple months now, 3 months. Time flies. I feel like what it's starting to boil down to me is like, regardless of the circumstances, there's Tua getting it done. And I felt like Thursday night was kind of one of those examples of like, well, it was weird just from the beginning, but it was the starting, but it was like he was thrown in there. He had a lead, had an opportunity to seal the game. Did he get it done? He did. You know, he wasn't perfect. He was 8-15, but he made some big throws. He was able to galvanize the offense. And I feel like I feel like he's producing in spite of this offense, you know?
Yes.
In spite of the offensive line, in spite of no running game, in spite of multiple pass catchers on IR in and out of the line. I feel like he's performing well in spite of it all. And I agree with you that there might be a slimmer margin for error with Tua because he doesn't have the physical traits of, you know, a guy that we're going to talk about later, Zach Wilson or, you know, Lamar, who he flip-faced. But again, I feel like he's winning in spite of it. And kind of something that, you know, I know we're talking in the Twitter spaces last week and I brought up to other people. It's like, do you think that if surrounded with the right infrastructure, do you think Tua can be like a top 15 quarterback? And I think most people were like, yeah, Tua can be a top 15 quarterback. And then I was like, do you think you can win a Super Bowl with a top 15 quarterback? And most people were kind of divided. They're like, yeah, but then it's like, it becomes a little more dicey. And I was like, okay, I understand that. But if we haven't seen him, you know, I'm not even talking about an average supporting cast. I mean,
right.
He's surrounded by a below average supporting cast. So, and again, we haven't even seen him play 16 full games. So was it really fair to cast judgment? I mean, I'm looking at Jalen Hurts, and Hurts was kind of struggling the first couple games of the season. And I was just watching ESPN, and they said he's like, he has a top QBR in the past 3 weeks. I mean, he's looking good. So it's like, we live in such a microwave society that it's like, if you're not Patrick Mahomes, if you're not perfect off the bat, you know, in the first month of you starting, it's like you're a scrub and they gotta get rid of you. But it's like Tua's far, and you said yourself, he's far from a finished product, and he hasn't even been surrounded by quality talent. I mean, imagine if he gets like an actual. I mean, they're already good in the short game because that's what they have to do. But imagine if they actually get an offensive line that can block consistently and then start throwing down the field. And they can actually use Jalen Waddle the right way. I mean, just imagine. Again, I do think that Tua has to improve. I do think that he has limitations, but again, you know, and again, no quarterback has the perfect structure. You know, no quarterback has the perfect environment around them. But is this really the supporting cast that we're gonna use to judge Tua? That's what I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, those are fair points. Because the supporting, I mean, the offensive line. See that, you know, when you mentioned the when you mentioned, you know, me being a Dolphins fan covering the Jets, I remember before the season, just before you got to the Herald, it was like, you know, during that dead period where like there's nothing to write about. So I did like a ranking across the AFC East, just each position group. And I remember like when I did the Dolphins, I had realized that like I had their weapons number two behind the Bills, but I didn't realize that like obviously I put the offensive line last. I put the running game, I think, last. And I should have realized that when you have like a bottom tier offensive line and a bottom tier running game, and you know, obviously a running game is bottom tier because of the offensive line, that, you know, I should have anticipated that there's going to be a lot more struggles for Tua health wise and production wise, because it's just, it's hard to play in this NFL without a at least average offensive line. Nobody's asking the Dolphins offensive line to be like elite. We're just saying be average, because at least when it's average, you have more opportunities to do certain things. You know, you have more opportunities to throw the ball down the field. Like, you'll have – like, Tua only has 15, 18 attempts beyond 20 yards. You know what I'm saying?
They're
like,
they're not throwing it downfield, man. Like, they're not. They're not even trying to throw it downfield.
Right, right, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, actually, my bad. That was Brissett. Tua had 13. Brissett.
Yeah.
Brissett had – Tua has 13. You know what I'm saying? So, really, you could find both of those. Like, whatever that number is, you know, we're journalists, not math wizards.
I think it's 31. It's 31. I mean, there we go.
Yeah, like, that goes back to the offensive line, just sometimes not giving it, providing enough time to where you can push the ball down the field. So, you know, you make some good points about, like, Tua not having had the requisite pieces to be able to develop from on, you know, on the field, from teammates' perspective, from a coaching staff. He's on his second. He's on his second/third offensive coordinator.
I still don't know who's calling the play. They say it's Gotti, but I'm not sure, man. I still don't know who's calling the plays.
It seems so dysfunctional. His receivers keep getting hurt. You know, like, well, Fuller's hurt. Like, I'm big on, like, let's not make all the excuses for quarterbacks. But, like, there's excuses and then there's reasons for why going on. Like, you know, Fuller's only played two games. Devontae Parker's played, like, what, three games with Tua? Maybe three games with Tua. I don't know. What's it called? Preston Williams has only played. I mean, he's barely played any games with Tua. Like,
and even when he's active, I mean, he barely got any snaps the past couple games. So yeah.
Well, yeah, like, this is the receiver core supposed to be a strength, but that's kind of dissipated because due to injury and things of that nature. So like, man, it's been they're limited offensively. You know what I'm saying? Like, it seemed better on paper, but they're kind of limited. Starts with offensive line.
Yeah.
Up with the running game, also the running game. Like, there's not a lot of like blue chip type of talents
outside of like Jalen Waddle and, you know, Mike Gesicki, maybe, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. I like Parker though. Parker when he's healthy, he's a baller when he's healthy. But
he's that big catch radius that Tua needs. I mean, they have a speed guy, they have an intermediate guy in Gesicki, but I think that they're really missing like a guy who Tua can just throw it up to, and he's accurate too. So it's like, if you throw it around Devontae, he's gonna come down with it, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, before we get to a quick break, I do want to bring up something. I know I shouldn't be saying this. We're a 3-17, but you know, a lot of people have been talking about the schedule, the road ahead. The Dolphins won two straight. They're 3-7. The next four games are against the Jets, the Panthers, I believe, and then the Giants. Then they play the Jets again after the bye week. Those teams are combined 12-25. Is there any chance the Dolphins can get on a little winning streak, continue the winning streak, and get to 500? I mean, because if you get to 500 with three games left, I mean, anything is possible, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if they win this week, I'm all in on the playoff push. But they got to win this week. My issue is they play. Let's say hypothetically they beat the Jets, right? Yeah. Which, I don't – I'm right now, I'm split. I don't know if they're going to be the Jets. I'll have my answer by the time you ask me later on. The Panthers have a fantastic defensive line.
Yep.
Like, that is going to be a bloodbath. They'll get after Tua. The Giants, they have a decent defense. They have a decent defensive line. The Jets again, Titans again. The Saints, like, everybody from here on out has a good front seven. The Jets, they have a good front seven when they decide to play. So my thing is, like, if the O-line is stated the way it is, you know, we're going to get that hope. and then eventually it's going to dissipate because there's going to be one game where the offensive line gets completely, you know, destroyed, and it's going to result in an L. So I do think they'll, beat the Patriots in Week 17, though.
Really? Okay. Yeah. You're not high on the Patriots right now. You think we're blowing smoke with them?
I think we're blowing smoke up their butt. I think in terms of like people think they're like people talk about them as if they're real contenders. No, they're not real contenders. Like they're not real contenders.
Is there anybody in the AFC outside of like the Titans and the Bills and maybe the Ravens or any other? Is any team a real contender? I mean, every AFC team has like a bad loss.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but to me, they're not better than the Bills, the Ravens. The Titans. They're not better than those three teams. So, like, no team ever goes deep in the playoffs for the most part with a rookie quarterback. Like, I can only think of one. That might be Big Ben when they won. Like, they went like 15-1, but then they ended up losing. Like,
I mean, your team you cover right now, the Jets, Mark Sanchez, the Ravens, Joe Flacco, back in the late 2000s, early 2010s.
But like those are anomalies. Like that happens rarely. That happens so rarely. So, and those two teams had dominant, not good, dominant defenses, like first in the NFL type stuff. So,
all right, we're getting off track. At least I got you. I got you on the record. You said that if the Dolphins beat the Jets this weekend, you're gonna perk your ears to some playoff talk. But you know, I hate to channel my inner flow on this one, but you know, we got to take it one day at a time. But we're gonna see this Sunday. We're gonna take a short break, but on the other side of things, we're gonna talk Jets. What's going on with Zach Wilson? That defense, and then preview Sunday's game. So stick with us. I'm still here with DJ from the New York Daily News. We've had a good first half talking Tua, Dolphins, last week's big win, and as we move into this weekend's game against the Jets, it's a really interesting matchup. I mean, the Dolphins have been the Jets—they've been struggling these past couple weeks. You know, a blowout loss to the Bills, who, I mean, of course, the class of the AFC East right now, one of the best teams in the AFC. But 45-17 loss. This defense has really, really been struggling, and I think that might be the most surprising part for you. I mean, you know, we were just talking about in Miami, the Dolphins defense are going through struggles. They have a defensive-minded head coach in Brian Flores or Robert Saleh. I mean, you would think that's the one thing that they would have right. I guess from your perspective, what's been going on with this defense, man?
So it's a combination of a lot of things. One most important thing, they just don't have the horses. Like, They just do not have the horses. Like, cause when you look at their starting 11, how many guys will start on other teams? The only people that I can like legit, like on a lot of other teams, let's say like, let's go like half or even 20 NFL teams. Like most wouldn't. Even like if you want to reverse it, let me reverse it. Like how many will start on 10 NFL teams? Like most would.
I like Quentin Williams.
And CJ Mosley.
Those are the only two. Yeah,
those two would start on a lot of on like I don't know, like on half NFL teams. That those are only two I'm like no brainers. Like CJ Mosley, you can play for the Dolphins right now, and he'll be their best middle linebacker. Quentin Williams, Rocket with Raekwon Davis, that'd be nice. But I think that's the main issue. Like there's not that many difference makers. Like yeah, you got John Frickin Myers, who's a solid. Defensive end, he deserved his money. You'll never ever hear me ever say like a guy don't deserve his money. Go get your bag, young man. But he's been a solid player. But that's about it. You know, like Bryce Hall, he's a solid corner. But he's not a game changer. He'll get some PBUs here and there, but if you want to go at him, you can go at him. And then on the other side, like at the other corner spot, like it's like if you want to throw to the left side, you could throw in with ease. You know what I'm saying? Like Brandon Echols is a 6th-round pick out of Kentucky who just got hurt, so he'll be out. But like people had success throwing at him. Now you got Javon Guidry who has speed, but he's 5'9". So like he can have tight coverage, but if you throw it back shoulder or you throw jump ball, you'll be able to have success. Like if I was Devontae Parker plays and I am Dolphins offensive coordinator, I'm throwing a lot of jump balls to Devontae Parker on the left side of the field because they don't, since Bryce Hall is their best corner, but they don't travel. They don't have their corners travel. Yeah. So that's going to be a mismatch right there. You know what I'm saying? If you have people travel. But the secondary, you know, safety spots, Ashton Davis, Marcus May just got hurt, so they replaced him with Wilson. Yeah, I think it's Gerard Wilson. That's who they replaced him with. But, like, I'm big on you need players to make plays. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you can scheme it all you want, but you got to have some players at the end of the day.
I said in a Twitter space the other day, they asked me, like, what do you think is more, scheme or player? And I said, like, if you go to a restaurant and you ask them to cook you a five-course meal, but the ingredients are just a bunch of crayons, are they going to be able to create you a five-course meal? No, they're not going to be able to create you a five-course meal. And I think that's been one of the issues, is just, like, lack of overall talent. I knew it was going to be a rough year defensively. Like I knew early in the year that was a lot of mirage, because based on the film, like, it was just teams not taking over. They're not executing against their defense. But I remember training camp against the Packers. Granted, that's Aaron Rodgers in that offense, but they tore that defense up in joint practices. The Eagles, who don't have a prolific offense right now, like, it's spurters at times, they tore up the Jets defense in training camp. And I get it, training camp, whatever, yada, yada, yada. You can't, you know, it's whatever. But I remember in the preseason game against the Packers, in training camp, the preseason game, the Packers didn't play their first or second string. The third string offense scored touchdowns on the first two drives. So I'm like, all right, this defense is not going to be good this year. But I did not expect it to be as bad as it is now, where they're giving up. They're getting averaging, you know, teams are scoring 43 points per game on them in the past four. So some of that, obviously, is players, and some of that is also scheme. Like, they don't really make a lot of good in-game adjustments. That I've been noticing, you know what I'm saying? Like, teams are able to kill them on play action game. Like, what I mean, kill them. Like, they've been one of the worst teams against play action, because teams know that they're an aggressive downhill team. So, you know, get into a big boy package where you got two tight ends or running back, run a play action, boom, you're going to get CJ Mosley flowing left. You're going to get Jared Davis flowing left. You're going to get Kyle Phillips flowing left, and then boom, you can play action. Play action, boom, you're going to have somebody wide open. That's what the Colts did. That's what the Patriots did. That's what the Bills did. I think Josh Allen threw over 300 yards off of play action last week. I just let you know what I'm saying? Like, you can, like, there's also, like, scheme issues in that aspect, to where, like, teams are consistently picking on one aspect of you, and they can do it with success. And then, obviously, the run defense is abysmal. Like, that's what's kind of frustrating. It's because their D-line was supposed to be one of, like, you know, the strong point of their defense. Yeah. The defense runs through the D-line. That's how solid runs it. But, like, teams can run on them. They've only held one team under 100 yards. And that was, that was the Bengals. But they've only held one team under 100 yards. Everybody else, it's been, you know, everybody eats when it comes to running against the Jets. Like, last
everybody
week,
eats B.
Yeah. Like, the Bills ran for four touchdowns last week. And, obviously, the Colts ran for 260 against 260 yards. Against the Jets. So it's literally all bad right now. You know, my dog Charles McDonald was like, he tweeted out, like, if this keeps going, like, do you consider canning Robert Saleh after 1 year? I mean, obviously, I don't think that they would or they should. But, like, he compared it to the Cardinals situation. Like, their defense, I mean, they weren't good that year, and it looked bad, and they got rid of him. I don't think they'll get rid of Saleh. But, like, again, like, as you mentioned, if your calling card is defense, your defense sucks, then, you know, that's something that, you know, you're that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing, to say the least.
So I hear everything you're saying, and I got this stat that says the Jets have allowed 175 points in the last four games, and it's the second most points allowed in a four-game span since the 1970 AFL-NFL merger.
Yes.
So what you're saying is, two in the Dolphins' offense is good for a 30 piece on Sunday. I mean, that's what you're saying, right?
No chance.
No chance of a 30 piece.
Bro, that O line is terrible, bro. Like, what? Man, listen, that O line is terrible. There is no way they're going to be able to put up 30 points, bro. Like, no way whatsoever. Because, like, you know, I don't want to say cliches, but it's me cliche. You know, the Jets, they're going to come out fighting hard. They're going to, you know, be, they're going to play a little bit better. Because I will give them, you know, to their defense, they've played some really good teams in the past few weeks that have explosive offenses. The Patriots, to an extent, have, you know, they've been able to produce explosive plays. The Colts can produce explosive plays. The Bills and the Bengals, they would produce explosive plays. Dolphins can't produce explosive plays like that.
They did last week, though. They did, and I know, I know, there were some busted coverages, but they did.
But they did. But like, the Jets don't really have a lot of busted coverages. What happens is like,
they just
get beat. You know, but for that to happen, for you to get beat down the field, what gotta happen?
You gotta run the ball, and you gotta do play action, and you gotta
and the O line gotta do what?
They gotta block.
I don't think the O-line can spell block right now.
Yeah, they still were struggling. And
bro, I saw like a PFF stat that like they've given up like 200-something pressures, and that was like almost 100 more than like the second.
Yeah, it's bad.
You know what I'm saying? Second most team. I'm like, bro, how? How is the offensive line that bad? So let me ask you this. Let me talk about the offensive line, and you know, because that basically is your question. That's why I don't think the offense can put up that many points because of the offensive line. What do you think is the biggest issue? Like, what do you think is coaching, or you think it's just drafting the wrong players? Like, what do you think has been the biggest issue from that perspective?
Man, that's a really good question because I wasn't here last year, so I wasn't able to, like, I wasn't covering the team last year, so I wasn't able to, like, I can't really speak to, like, personal knowledge of, like, seeing it up close. But all the stats show that this was, like a below average to maybe bottom third offensive line. But by no means was it like the worst offensive line in the NFL. And by every metric, this is like, at least pass blocking, this is like the worst offensive line in the NFL.
Right.
And I think that it's fair to question some of the picks that Greer has made, but they also have invested so much in the offensive line. I mean, they drafted Austin Jackson in the first round of 2020. They got Liam Eichenberg, I think the second or third round. They got Robert Hunt in the first three rounds, maybe the third round pick. It's not for lack of trying. And I do, and I mean, this is like pretty easy to say, but I think it is like a mixture. I mean, they have a first year offensive line coach who was just in the NFL a couple of years ago. And now he's like, you know, finally getting an opportunity to be an offensive line coach. I think that they definitely would be helped by having a more veteran guy in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I don't know. I mean, Liam Eichenberg just has not looked good at all. He's regressed at left tackle. And it's crazy that he's looked this bad because he was such a good left tackle at Notre Dame. And that's not to say that, if you're good in college at left tackle, you're going to be good in the NFL. That's not true. But to see the way he's regressed, it has not really improved at all. It's been like alarming. And I'm almost thinking, like, is guard like his best spot? I thought he was okay to below average at right tackle, but he has like been bad at left tackle. And it's like this team has like one possible tackle, and that's Robert Hunt. And he's been like good at guard, so you can't move him because that's like the one spot you've actually got down. So they're gonna have to go back to the drawing board. They're gonna have $80 million of cap room. They gotta throw some money at somebody. They might have to draft another two offensive linemen. But when you look at like the lack of development in some of these guys, I mean, I do have to question coaching a bit. There is the potential that they just maybe didn't get the right guys. I mean, Austin Jackson was supposed to be a left tackle. He's looked better at left guard. So maybe, you know, I do have to point fingers at the front office, but I also have to point the finger at coaching and say, hey, you had a lot of these guys last year. They got worse, you know.
That's a good point. I think it's a combination of both. I don't think it's all Greer and all Flo, but at the end of the day, it's a combination of the two. So with the offensive line being that bad, you got Quinnen Williams, you got John Frankie Myers, you got Sheldon Rankins, you got Foley from the Jets, you got Dolphins fans are familiar with Shaq Lawson. Like when you have guys, like they'll be able to, they should have success against this defensive this offensive line. If they don't, I'm writing a column ripping. They can't. But I will say this. On paper, this is a good defensive line. However, they haven't played up to their standards as of late. It's getting a little bit alarming because I believe that their bottom tier in terms of quarterback pressures.
Yeah.
Top 10. So, like, their blitz percentage is in the top 10. You know what I'm saying? So, when they send just four, they haven't been able to get there. And I think that's a combination, though, of, like, teams being able to hit them a quick game, teams being able to, okay, we're going to leave 7 in, we might leave 8 in, and we're going to let our guys on the outside win because I ain't gonna lie, like you can win on the outside against the Jets. Like, especially if you want to just go left, you can win out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think that's been an issue. But we'll see, man. It's, you know, as we thought, it's bad on bad, right? A bad O line, a bad offense versus a bad defense. Something's gotta give.
Yeah. And you know, I was kind of speaking tongue in cheek about the 30 piece, but the over under is 45. So Vegas isn't really high on any of these teams scoring more than like 24 points. But I can't go the entire show without, you know, giving a shout out to the Dolphins defense though.
I
I think that again, I mean, I'm not sure if Zach Wilson will play, whether it'll be Mike White, the legend, or you know, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, Joe Flacco. I'm just kidding. I just say that. I just say that facetiously because, you know, I'm from Baltimore and he delivered the city a championship. But, I gotta definitely give a shout-out to the Dolphins defense. I mean, as somebody that covered Lamar Jackson for two seasons, I mean, I haven't – that was one of, like, the best overall game plans that I've seen. And, I mean, I think that defense is back for real. Back to the 2020 form. And again, kind of going back to what we kind of joke around about the playoff talk. I mean, if they play that well, I mean, I won't even say that well, but if they continue to turn the ball over at the rate that they are and to play around that level, I mean, the margin of error for that offense, you know, really, really wide. I mean, I think that was the issue earlier in the season that, you know, not only was the offense struggling and they were kind of regressing, but the defense regressed too. So it was like nothing else. Nothing was shaking. Nothing was going right. But when you have the defense playing that well, I mean, you can kind of get away with a couple three and outs, maybe a turnover here and there. And again, I think that defense is really going to really dictate whether, you know, they do maybe get back into the playoff picture or, you know, just even get to 500. And again, I mean, I think that they're going to have a big game, you know, on Sunday, regardless of who's starting. What do you think?
Yeah. The way they've been playing, bro, the last 3 weeks, I mean, they contained Josh Allen until the fourth quarter. And I think that's just more like, you know, I think the Bills made adjustments. They started feeding Cole Beasley a lot more. And they were able to, you know, eventually score a couple of points, you know, a couple of touchdowns late in the game. But they held Josh Allen, that offense, you know, they held him down. Obviously shut down Lamar. Tyrod Taylor isn't like an elite quarterback, but they were able to contain him too. So, I mean, they've been playing well recently. And then with the Jets, I think it'll probably be Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson's been out. See, here's my concern with putting Zach Wilson back out there. If he's not like if he's not all the way 100% healthy or close to it, the Dolphins are going to heat him up. Like last week,
they're going to heat him up regardless, to be honest. They're going to heat him up regardless.
Exactly. Like, they blitzed on 51% of Lamar Jackson's dropbacks last week, according to Next Gen Stats. And Zach Wilson has not been good against the blitz this year. He's a rookie, so that's normal. Like, he has a pass rate of 56, right? And when Zach was out there this year, he was not – like, he had moments. Like, the Tennessee Titans game was a moment. He's had some throws. Like, there's some throws against the Panthers where they was like, oh – or some throws against the Falcons where it was like, oh, but then it was also throws where it was like, bro, what are you doing? Like,
he's been a rookie, essentially.
Exactly. He's a rookie. By every metric, he's been one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. By every metric, you can go counting stats, analytically, completion percentage, passer rating, QBR. You can go by any stat you want to go by and be like, yo, he's been one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. But again, he's a rookie, and it's more part of this is the normal developmental process for rookie quarterbacks, not the Justin Herbert, the Joe Burrows, Baker his first year, Baker's mid now, but Baker's first year. So he's been he's struggled. Like, it's been rough, but you know, him sitting on the bench, I want to see what he learned. Cause a lot of times it was just him not taking what the defense gave him. Cause there's a time we could just check it down and get the ball, you know, if the first read's not there, get the ball out. But then also, man, I don't like the Jets receivers against the Dolphins defensive backs. I don't like it. Like, Corey Davis is a 1B, more like a 2. I think Howard should have success against Corey. I do think Corey catches his fair share of passes against Howard. Nick Needham against Crowder. I do like Crowder in that matchup. But then like Elijah Moore against Byron Jones. I like Byron Jones in that matchup. Not that Byron Jones is like fantastic, but like Byron Jones is a bigger cornerback, and he can run with Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore, like, that's his next maturation process, being like a smaller receiver playing on the outside, being able to win against bigger cornerbacks. Because there was a play against he drew an offensive pass interference. Mike White threw a fade ball to him. I think he was going against Levi Wallace, and he just couldn't create any separation. He pushed off a little bit. You know, he got that he got a offensive PI. He didn't make a play later on in the game where he went up and snagged the ball on a fade route, which was impressive. But there are other plays. I remember Tre'Davious White, Jay, I'm talking about, try to put him in the cooler off the line. And I think Elijah ran like a curl route, but like he got no separation, you know what I'm saying, on that play specifically. And I think he had like one of his lowest yard per separation. Separation yardage per game, whatever. You know the stat I'm talking about.
Yeah, separation.
Yard separation, yeah. He had one of his lowest of the year against the Buffalo Bills. So he's still learning how to handle, you know, when people are pressing him. You know what I'm saying? Like, he can still make plays. Like, he's still a tremendous talent. But I do, at this point, like Byron Jones over that. And then obviously, you got the boy out of Oregon. He's been balling lately. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's been balling.
You know what I'm saying? Brandon Jones has been coming along. And again, when we talk about the blitz thing, the Jets offensive line has had issues picking up stunts and picking up disguised blitzes. Like, they struggle with that because, like, their communication ain't that great. Like, it is what it is. It just ain't that great. I remember, like, the first drive, like, the Bills sent five, but, like, they sent five, but, like, they had, like, a DB lined up over the slot, and then, like he blitzed. He lined up over the slot, and he blitzed. But, like, the DN on the outside at left tackle, he crashed inside, and I believe George Fant just went with that DN, and then, boom, here comes that I think it might have been a safety. It might have been either Hoyer or Poyer. I mean, no, it might have been Poyer or Hyde. I forgot which one it was. But, boom, pressure right in Mike White's face immediately. They haven't been that good against when teams blitz and, you know, in terms of picking that up. So there's a lot of things that – I think it's going to be a defensive battle both ways, because there's a lot of things that, like, the Jets struggle with that the Dolphins do well in. Like, the Dolphins play a lot of man. The Jets struggled against the Broncos, ran a lot of man. The Patriots ran a lot of man. You know what I'm saying? They struggled in those games offensively. But then also the Jets D-line should have a lot of success against the Dolphins offensive line. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I anticipate this being a low-scoring game. I just know that the Dolphins defense should come to play. Because, you know, they're riding high right now, man. Like, they've been playing really good football, been coming really good game plans, and they've been executed. So,
you got a score prediction for me?
I got the Jets winning.
You got the Jets? Oh, wait. You said all that. You got the Jets winning?
Yeah, I got the Jets winning. 2017. Oh, that O-line's too bad. I have no confidence in the offensive line. They're going to have to show me. I got the Jets winning, low scoring game. Because if it's close enough, if Zach Wilson plays, I expect him to make some. Because Zach Wilson gets better as the game goes on. Like, he gets really, like, he gets like his, like, the difference between him in the first half and the second half are two totally different quarterbacks. He's getting more comfortable, and he'll take more chances. And I feel that he'll be able to make a play here and there, and, you know, pull out the win. So I got the Jets winning. It pains me to say it, but
Dolphins feel it gonna be on your head tomorrow.
It's not my fault. Maybe if you get a competent offensive line, and then maybe I would have been like, oh yeah, this offense will win, but. They got a terrible offensive line, so I low scoring game. Dolphins defense do enough, but the offense, you know, costs them the game. So that's where I'm at.
Man, all right. I guess it's my turn. I'm gonna go with the Dolphins, and I say that with minimal confidence, and not just because not for any like specific reason other than like. It's been a weird season, especially a weird past couple weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like could the Dolphins? I mean, I think it'll be close regardless. But I'll go with the Dolphins, maybe like 26-23. I mean, if the Jets, excuse me, if the Jets win this game, I mean, I would not be surprised at all, just because, like I said, this year has been so weird.
Right.
Some of these results.
The Dolphins did lose the Jaguars, so it's not like.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing should be a surprise at this point. But I do really think that the defense is starting to like really get to its groove. I think that they'll give the Jets some issues. And again, it's like, I mean, the Dolphins have to eventually they have to eventually hit on some of these big plays, man. Like they have to. I mean, if not this week, I mean they're able to do it last week, albeit against some busted coverages. But if they can't do it this weekend, I mean, when are they going to do it? You know what I'm saying?
All righty, man. I mean, as a fan, I hope you're right.
I got you, man. It's definitely going to be a fun weekend. I'm really excited to go out there and to, you know, finally see you in person. And I want to say thank you for joining me on this week's edition of the Dolphins in Depth podcast. To the listeners, thank you. We'll be back again next week to do this again. But until then, you guys take care. Bye.